There's plenty to talk about in the world of football, and a man who's going to join me now to talk about all things global football is a man who is very excited indeed, I believe, about the Confederations Cup. Our guest for today here on World Football Daily, if Rafa Gonzalez is my brother from another mother, this guy is probably like a very close cousin in the World Football Daily family, at least. It is, of course, Mr. Juan Arango from the Mad About Football Boys joining us here on the show. Juan, man, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. You know, part of being that pseudo-incestuous kind of relationship that we have here at the network, it's, you know, always a pleasure to be on the show.
It's always a pleasure to have you on, man. We love listening to your tones as you come down our headphones and into our ears with your football knowledge, man. First and foremost, we've got to start with the Confederations Cup. Well, we've got the semi-finals coming up in the next couple of days. Of course, Brazil take on Uruguay today, Spain, Italy tomorrow. Which of these two semi-finals are you more excited and eager to watch?
No doubt, Uruguay, Brazil.
Is that just a South American bias coming in?
Absolutely.
Oh, come on, man.
No. Okay. I mean, both have their respective bits of spice to it. I mean, yeah, of course, all the storylines surrounding Brazil and Uruguay, of course, going back to 1950, the Maracanazo. Now they're talking about a possible Mineirazo. But, you know, there's also other storylines, of course. The police force in Brazil, or actually in Belo Horizonte, talking about, you know, this match shouldn't be played. There's about maybe 100 to 300,000 protesters that are going to be out blocking the streets, blocking any potential entries to the stadium. So, I mean, from that perspective, let's look at that, because that's much more important as far as the overall social, political, socioeconomic situation that is facing Brazil right now. But if we talk about what's going on within the pitch, it's going to be an interesting setup. Uruguay already confirmed their lineup. I'll give it to you right now. I mean, they confirmed it on Monday evening. It's Muslera in goal with Maxi Pereira over on the right. He'll be playing at the four. Lugano Godin in the middle with Cáceres at the three. Gonzalez with Arevalo Ríos, Rodriguez, and then Forlan, Suarez, and Cavani. So pretty much a 4-3-1-2, or a 4-3-3 if you want to look at it that way. Maxi Pereira will probably be playing a little bit further up, so essentially you'll have a back line of three. The problem with Maxi Pereira playing so high up is that you have Neymar in that sector, so he's not going to be playing so high up as he's been accustomed to. Same thing, even when Matias Aguirre Garay was playing in the match against Tahiti, he was, of course, had that luxury. Today, that's not going to be the case. So you're going to see essentially a back line of four for Uruguay. The big issue there is going to be how Lugano is able to back up Pereira, because Lugano, we know that he's a lumberjack in that back line. And you know, is he going to be able to handle what Neymar is going to offer? Is he going to be able to handle having Fregi come into the middle? How's that going to work out? So it's not just what Lugano's doing. It's going to be also what Diego Godin's able to do in order to back him up. So you're going to see all those issues. Arevalo Ríos, based on this lineup, is going to have a tremendous match, the man in the middle. He's the one that's going to have to be able to bite and scrap and fight and try and break and destroy everything in the middle for Uruguay. Now, from the Brazilian standpoint, you're starting to see the team gel a little bit more. And this is probably the first match since that Paraguay game in the Copa America back in 2011 where you're going to have to see Brazil really start to look at the expectations, the possibility of going to a final and seeing how they react in a match where they are not just expected to win, but expected to win in convincing manner.
Do you really think Brazil are expected to win in convincing manner? I know, obviously, there's the history of European sides struggling in South America in general, mm-hmm. and Brazil have that one loss in the last 50 years on home soil. But you look at the caliber of these sides. I mean, Uruguay's front three alone just puts fear into the hearts of the majority of sides around football. Spain and Italy as well, no slouches, and have performed extremely well in South America so far in this tournament. Mm-hmm. Is there still that expectation?
It's Brazil. I mean, the saying is Brasil é Brasil. You know, Brazil is Brazil. I mean, there's, you know, just that saying alone should tell you what they expect. You know, we're Brazil. We have to win. You know, what are you talking about? The big issue with Brazil, though, is that throughout this tournament, yes, they've shown that they can be solid, but they also, from the offensive end, also depend a lot on individual play. instead of when you see Spain, it's, you know, you don't know where the next goal is coming from. You know that, you know, collectively they drop back, they go on the attack. You can have, you know, one of their central defenders come in and even attack you. You straight in the middle, or they come from the wings. You don't know where they're coming from. Brazil, you know that everything begins and ends with Neymar. That's the beauty of this now. Starting to see, well, you can't really criticize the guy as much as they were before the Confederations Cup. This is his team at this point, and he's really taking over. You see him wanting the ball. You see him yelling at some of his teammates here and there. But they depend on individual play way too much. Uruguay can shut that down. Uruguay can really do that. But on the other end, who is there to help in the creation? They have to drop back Diego Forlán, because one of the options that was being looked at, okay, well, Diego Forlán will come off the bench. We have Gaston Ramírez. He hasn't been able to step up. Same thing with Nico Lodeiro. He hasn't been able to step up either. And you don't have that player in the middle for Uruguay to really step and really have that vision to open things up for a Edinson Cavani, for a Luis Suarez. Well, Luis Suarez is the one that has to do it, but he's way up top, and he has to be doing some other stuff as well. And to a detriment in some cases, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but there needs to be someone for Luis Suarez to be able to work with. But again, going back to Brazil, they depend way too much on individual play, and I think that'll end up nipping them in the bud, especially in these phases of the tournament, now as they get deeper and deeper.
Are you surprised how much they appear to rely on Neymar with this side? Because we've seen Hernanez, of course, in Serie A play extremely well. You know, you've got Oscar in there, who's come on leaps and bounds at Chelsea last season. Hulk, who's such a big player as well. Yet so much of the focus just continues to go to Neymar. Is that a worry as a Brazil fan? Do you think that despite all this other quality around them, there's still just the focus on this one kid at the end of the day, this one youngster?
Maybe yes and no. I guess I would have to say yes, because he was expected to do this, and people were asking him to do this, and now he's doing it. So really, nobody can go and start criticizing him now for actually stepping up and doing so. But at the same time, you have to start worrying about the level of performance of some of the other players, such as Hulk. Hulk, he really hasn't stepped up in a big way in this tournament. You've seen players such as Joe come off the bench and be able to offer that catalyst. You've seen Fredji be able to offer, you know, his capabilities, you know, in the area. You know, he's an out and out number nine, a classic number nine that has been able to offer, you know, in this tournament some scoring support. But there's been some players that, okay, they haven't really stepped up, but again, this is for Brazil, for the national team, for this team. It's not just it's not their be all and end all. What they're looking to do is, you know, and Luis Felipe Scolari has said it since the beginning. Hey, you know what? This is a dress rehearsal. This is probably not going to be the team that will step onto the pitch a year from now that you'll be seeing. There'll be some changes. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what those changes are, who those changes consist of.
It's going to be a cracking tie this evening between Uruguay and Brazil. I think I speak for everybody here at World Football Daily when we're all really looking forward to this one and have been so impressed about the Confederations Cup in general. There has, of course, been, as you mentioned earlier, that underlining negative. I don't want to say it's a negative, because what the protests that are taking place on the streets of Brazil, arguably it very just in terms of the lack of funding that's going elsewhere around the country and so much has been put into the World Cup. It was announced this week that there would be no backup plan, that the World Cup would take place in Brazil. Could this get to a possibility, though, Wan, where we can't have a World Cup because of the momentum that we've seen over the last just week or so of these protests being a handful of people, a few thousand people, to 300,000 and a million people across the country protesting?
Look, I mean, it hit home, at least for me. I mean, obviously, I'm not in Brazil right now, but I got to speak to a lot of Brazilian fans this weekend. Cruzeiro was down here in South Florida. They were playing the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. And it was a nice crowd. About 6,000 fans went, mostly Cruzeiro fans. And I got to talk to a lot of them, and they were, and you saw, you know, Change Brazil flags and Change Brazil banners going all over the stadium, and it really hit home, because you start to see that in any country, you know, for that matter, you know, if healthcare, and I really don't want to get way too much into politics, but But you, I mean, when you start seeing that, you know, there's a lack of healthcare, there's, you know, the transportation system is pretty much antiquated. It's obsolete for all intents and purposes. When you know, the roads, I mean, there was a great picture just last week of Uruguay going in their bus through a dirt road. I mean, at that point, it was just mud. And you know, they're driving into their practice session. I mean, and there's no, you know, there's no cement roads, there's no logistics, there's nothing. And you know, many people are angry at that. You know, and the fact that FIFA comes in, and there was a great quote by Romario just a couple. You know, FIFA comes in, they establish their circus, they do everything, they demand everything, but yet they don't leave anything. You know, they don't pay any taxes, they don't pay any type of compensation to the country, and you know, they leave with all the money that they've generated. And that's really been one of the things. But the most important thing is that you see the players, and all the players have come out to support the fans. And that's really key. Now, will there not be a World Cup? I at this stage, I think it's too late. You know, it's way too late. And, you know, they're going to have to stick with what they have. They have to stick with their guns. And FIFA already know that the issue's been there. But my personal beef is that, you know, let's backtrack about 4 years ago. South Africa were getting a ton of heat over, oh, are they going to be mm-hmm. ready? Are they not going to be ready? But at this stage, they were much more, they're way more prepared than Brazil are at this point. And, you know, and still we were having questions, or the media as a whole were having questions. Oh, is South Africa ready for the World Cup? And to be quite honest, you know, South Africa looks like a complete success compared to what's going on in Brazil right now.
It is worrying for football fans. I don't want to say portion out blame or anything like that here, Wan, but
no.
you have to look at the way FIFA did this whole bidding process back in 2003, I think it was, when Brazil were given the World Cup unopposed. Nobody else was bidding against them because it was said there was going to be a World Cup in South America. Only Brazil tried to get it, and of course
actually Colombia did too.
But it was quite a late ditch bid, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was very well. There was a great article by Tim Vickery that wrote about it, and I had completely forgotten about the Colombia part. Colombia did go in and try and oppose, but that was quickly quashed and said, hey, forget it. You know, and Brazil did run unopposed. But then there are also a lot of other issues. You know, Brazil trying to have 12 venues instead of 8. You know, now that costs more money, and things started delaying a little bit more. And the different issues that they had with the unions that were really something that hindered. I mean, the stadium in Manaus had a major issue because, first of all, that stadium, there was already a stadium in place, and they wanted to be certified. I forget the term that's used, but they wanted to be a green stadium. In other words, they had to wait to pretty much, you know, demolish the stadium, be able to take those the pieces of that stadium, take it somewhere where they could be verified, saying, okay, this is official, and then wait for those pieces to be able to be remolded to be able to use them for the new stadium. So, I mean, that in and of itself is a great issue, and one of the stadiums that's pretty much way behind schedule compared to the others is the one in Manaus.
But in terms of the bidding process now for World Cups in general, you see the big furore that was around the bidding for the 2022 and 2018 World Cups. Now, when you look at those and see how much money goes into the bidding process, let alone into actually building a World Cup in general, which do you see as being more positive? The way that FIFA tried to spread a World Cup out and what's happened in Brazil now, or perhaps the even more expensive way of doing it with the amount of money that has to go into a bid and preparing a bid, and then the amount of changes that have to be made to bids to make it FIFA approved, if you will, and to kind of redo a World Cup that way? Which you see is a better example of how to put on a World Cup? Or is there no way of doing it now without having these huge costs because of the restrictions and stipulations that you have to meet to be a FIFA kind of approved country for it?
The thing is that the way FIFA are trying to, you know, the criteria they're using is very unrealistic, noticing that the economic environment, not just in Brazil, but all over the world. I mean, if based on that, then the World Cup's pretty much going to be in the state of the economics and internationally, you know, throughout the planet. I mean, then only based on that criteria, only 5 or 6 countries are going to be able to hold the World Cup at this point.
Being Germany every year, right?
yeah, it's going to be Germany, the U.S., and God knows who else, maybe Japan. But as far as that's concerned, that's going to be an issue. Now, here's another thing, and I'm going to be pretty intrigued. And you know, everybody talks about the 2022 and what have you. Wait till 2030 comes around, because right now there's only been one country that's or one bid that's being talked about, and it's Uruguay, Argentina. Okay, and let's see. You know, Argentina are right now in a very precarious economic situation, especially the way things are going on over there. How is that going to be? You know, and they're talking about maybe by the end of November of this year, we're going to see pretty much 2001 revisited in that country. So, from an economic standpoint, what's going to happen there? That's going to be interesting to see as far as the 20 and then the 2030 World Cup bid. That is pretty much essentially unopposed, more for symbolic reasons. You know, it'll be the 100th anniversary of the World Cup, and they want to play it in the country, or at least have it played in one of the countries where it was originally played, of course, in Uruguay and Argentina with that joint bid. That's going to be interesting to see. But is what you said, I really don't know if there can be a – they're going to have to revamp that whole bid criteria. Because it's just, I mean, it just seems like FIFA's living in this bubble that really they're unaffected by, you know, by the world economic situation. And reality really doesn't set in for some countries to be able to spend billions upon billions on just a couple of stadiums without infrastructure.
Yeah, you have to put a price on the pride of being able to host a World Cup effectively and efficiently without it being detrimental to the country.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it has to be that way because, I mean, you know, for better or worse, I mean, you start seeing, and I've seen it already, having gone to World Cup qualifiers, that you know, you really don't see that the actual people have a chance to be able to enjoy this the event that they're pretty much throwing. And it should be something that, hey, we get the experience to enjoy the flavor of the Brazilian people. And I'm not talking in a 5-star hotel locked away in some little, you know, isolated area. I'm talking about going with the people and being able to enjoy in a safe and positive environment, those types of things. But, you know, FIFA makes it where it's nearly impossible for those individuals to enjoy. I mean, Ollie, think about that. I mean, if the ticket prices were affordable, do you think the stadiums in Brazil would have more people, less people, despite the protests I'm talking about?
No, there'd be so many more people in there.
I mean, I'm not saying it'll be a full stadium, but damn, you know, at least make it affordable so the people that live there. I mean, there was a great study when I was living in Argentina that they were talking about Brazil. This was back in 2002, and obviously those numbers have changed, but it kind of gives you at least a measure of what's going on in Brazil economically, even through an economic boom, and now it's kind of, you know, fizzing out. There was a stat back in 2002 saying that Brazil's 10% of Brazilians own pretty much 70 to 80% of Brazil's riches.
Wow.
So I mean, you see the disparity there. And obviously that disparity has become even – that gap is even widened more and like it has in several other countries. So, I mean, how can you make it where you're paying, you know, 50, 60, 70 euros for a World Cup ticket and yet it's in your own backyard and you can't go?
Yeah, it's criminal. It's fans once again, and we see it in so many places in Europe, yeah, as well as South America. Fans being priced,
South Africa too, yeah.
But fans being priced out of the game, and really without the fans, what is this game? You know, what is the point in playing football if no one's going to be there to watch it?
I mean, you're right. And you know what? I mean, I was talking to a fan over in England the other day, and he was telling me that it's more expensive to go see Norwich City than it is to go see Bayern Munich. And I know I'm changing a little bit, but I used to give you that perspective that the fans are being priced out over there too.
Yeah, it's a disaster area to go and get a ticket for a football game, especially at a big side over here, because you have to pay a membership fee even just to be able to buy a one game ticket kind of thing, mm-hmm, to some of these clubs. It's ridiculous. Just in general, actually, Wayne, because I've been this is personally more my own pure interest than anything else, but I've been covering a bit of South American football now over the last, mm-hmm, few months, and I was lucky enough to be covering the Peruvian El Clásico, if you will, the Alianza Lima taking on Universitario last weekend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, full stadium, great to see so many fans in there. But so many of the games that I've covered that haven't been obviously derby games or big sides across South America have been empty stadiums. Now, is that because the ticket prices there are so expensive? Is that to do with ticket prices, or is that to do with just a lack of interest because people aren't fussed with these sides that aren't maybe in derby games or you know, don't have a chance of winning the league? Because some of these stadiums are 40,000 people strong, yet, mm-hmm, well, are able to hold that, and yet nobody's there.
That's fan violence. You attribute it to that. I mean, and it's going on pretty much in many places. In Colombia, it's happening too, where you have lots of issues with fans, you know, with hooligan, you know, hooliganism, and you know, Barra Bravas getting involved. I mean, there was a Peruvian Clásico between Universitario and Alianza Lima, just I think it was 2 years ago, where a fan was pretty much thrown off, you know, thrown out of the stands, and it was killed. You know, I mean, it happens, and it's sad. I mean, I don't mean to sound like I'm glorifying it. I'm not. It's just sad to see that. You know, okay, well, I came out alive. Mm. I mean, you're happy. Oh, you know, nothing happened to me. Oh, that's the first thing they ask you. I mean, I've gone to Boca Juniors games, and you really have this adrenaline that it's a combination of you being thrilled of the fact that you're at the stadium, but at the same time, you kind of have this little quiver because you kind of fear for your life.
Mm.
And I know I shouldn't be saying that, but it's the truth. I mean, insecurity, not just in Peru, but in several countries in Latin America, that's one of the major issues. I mean, it's the case in Brazil. It's the case in Colombia. There was a fan in Medellin that was killed just a few days ago. And same thing in Bogota as well. And it's not just Peru. It's pretty much all over Latin America where you have those issues go on. There's been, you know, fans that have been, you know, there have been fights and there have been all types of things. And that's the minor stuff. That's the not so hardcore end of it. You know, when you start seeing, you know, fans and shootouts outside of stadiums, you know, that's the major issue, you know. And that's why, you know, as a person, you know, with friends, and do you want to go with your girlfriend to that type of environment? Do you want to go with your friends to that type of environment? Nah, man, I'd rather go and crack a couple of beers open, have an asado or something like that, and watch the game from the comfort of my own home.
But even in a stadium, when there's, you know, it can hold maybe 40,000 people, and there's no one there. Is that still for fan violence? I mean, there's a couple of games I've watched in Bolivia, mm-hmm. and elsewhere where there literally a handful of, you know, 40-50 people. Is that to do with ticket prices or just a lack of interest?
There is something to do with ticket prices as well. I mean, inflation in some countries has really risen, and of course, you know, the salaries can't keep up. They don't raise salaries. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. You know, salaries don't keep up with inflation in some countries. And yeah, I mean, sometimes they do get priced out. Sometimes, you know, you don't want, you know, you can't pay. And sometimes, you know, there's individuals that end up getting the tickets and reselling them. You know, for a Super Clásico, there's been tickets that have been sold for $2,000 in Argentina. Wow. I mean, but it's still, you know, it does have to do with that, of course. That is a big factor. But the main one, of course, is the fan violence. You don't want to be involved in those situations if you can't, if, you know, if there's no need to be. Why go and look for trouble? I mean, people tell me, you know, why are you going to go to the stadium over, you know, to go see River Plate play if, you know, there's going to be trouble, or see Independiente play if you know there's going to be trouble? And yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because people are missing out on a great experience, but that experience has been tainted to such a great deal in South America, in some countries more than others, that you know, it's not even recommendable. I mean, there's been times people have asked me, "Hey, man, what stadium should I go in Argentina, and where should I sit?" I'm like, "Man, you know what? I don't know." You know, I say it because, you know, I really, you know, to me it would be dishonest to say, you know, am I going to be safe in a stadium in South America? I'm like, man, I don't know. Depends which one. Depends what situation. Depends what match.
It's a different world, I guess, isn't it, in South America compared to elsewhere.
Look, I mean,
no, I don't mean that in like a over embellished type way or anything like that. But
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, no big deal. But it's just a whole different world because, you know, while in Europe, I mean, and they look at Europe as wow, look how organized they are. Oh my God, you can have a trophy presentation in the stands? Wow, that is amazing. You know, in South America, you cannot do that. You can't go and have, you know, the players walk up into the VIP or the presidential balcony to be able to receive their medals, because either they're going to end up, you know, butt naked en route to the medal stand, or on the way down, they're not going to have a medal, or the trophy is going to get snagged from someone. So, I mean, it's a very... It's a sad set of occurrences of situations in South America. I mean, you know, as much as I'm always there, you know, promoting it, I mean, I also have to be realistic and let people know that there is a negative side to it, and you know, it's just part of that culture, that viveza, or how they call it in Brazil, the jeitinho, and you know, that you find people trying to cut corners in order to be able to make something happen, and they do it at any cost possible, and that's not just with a World Cup logistical preparation, but it's also from a, you know, basic everyday circumstance where they try and find the easy way out for everything.
Juan, we could talk about this for hours, mm-hmm. probably hours, but I'm afraid we're going to have to let you go. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, mate. We always enjoy getting you on. Just for quickly before you go, let us give us a quick insight into what's coming up on Mad About Football in the off season, or the European off season at least at the moment.
Well, we've been in off season because I've been out of the country, you know, covering the U.S. national team. George has been just going nuts, calling games over Goal TV. And Mike was covering the NBA finals, so
it's not bad then, yeah.
No, I mean that's the reason why we haven't been doing shows as of late. But you know, I mean I've still been interviewing people, but we'll be talking. Well, we're working on a real special guest, and we'll be talking about Confederations Cup next week. But I'll kind of keep it under wraps. I'll let you guys know as soon as that particular guest is all wrapped up. We're going to be talking about Confederations Cup, World Cup qualifiers. Of course, Copa Lib resumes. Liga MX begins in just about 3 weeks again. July 19th, they kick off over in Mexico again. And, you know, pretty much back at it again. You know, who would have thunk it?
You can't stop Juan Arango once he gets going, that's for sure. And you're pretty much on the beat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, mate. And I'm sure you're quite happy as well about your Heat boys topping San Antonio, mate.
Actually, George and Mike are thrilled, you know, you know, they were thrilled. I mean, I'm not a Heat fan, but, you know, I'm happy. Hey, you know, the local team won. It's all good, but whatever. You know, I think Mike was one of those guys hanging from the scaffolding just at the parade on Monday. So, I mean, I saw him hanging from somewhere, but he was thrilled. You know, he was cuddling up with LeBron and with, he was hugging Danny Green when they're celebrating the other day.
Oh wow, that's that's pretty awesome. Although surely he should have been hugging Ray Allen after that Game 6 3-pointer. Like that's
I think many other people in Miami want to do much more to Ray Allen than just hug him at that point.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's many people in Boston that were absolutely loathed that moment as well. After he was at the Celtics last season. Look, man, we have to let you go, and we have to move on and get out, mate. But it's a pleasure to have you on the show, man. Always always a top laugh. I'm sorry we've taken your time for so long today.
No, that's okay, man. No problem, man. I'm actually chilling. I'm waiting for Uruguay Brazil to start, so we'll see what happens.
Well, we hope that you enjoy the Confederations Cup semi-finals today and tomorrow, man, and we look forward to getting you back on the show. Take care, man.
All right, cool, man. All right, take care. Cheers.
Have a good one. Juan Arango from the Mad About Football Boys joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things South American football, fan violence, getting people back in the stands, ticketing, Brazil, the economic situation, Confederations Cup build-up. We pretty much covered it all.